Our next speaker is our greatest living poet. She came to prominence in 1975 when she won Opportunity Knox. She sold absolutely millions of copies. No living poet has sold more copies than our next wonderful speaker, Pam Ayres, talking about her new book, Doggedly Onward, A Life in Poems. Ladies and gentlemen, Pam Ayres.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody, and good afternoon. Oh, my goodness. Yes, I've been travelling to various book festivals and nice occasions like this one to talk about my new book, which is called Doggedly Onward, which describes really my attitude over the past 5 decades, in that I have gone doggedly onwards writing things that I loved to write and having the pleasure of seeing people laugh. On the front of my picture of my book, there is a painting of me and my dog, Izzy. And this came about because the artist, Alex Chamberlain, is putting together an exhibition for the National Portrait Gallery of people who are connected with the services. And because I was in the Women's Royal Air Force for 4 years, he asked if he could paint my portrait. So if anybody says to you, that Pam Ayres is no oil painting, you can say, I beg to differ. So I've only got 10 minutes. So I thought I would just tell you a little bit about things that have seemed important in my life. One of the things I've noticed, first of all, before I do that, about getting old, is that you don't have the stamina that you had before. You think you have, but you haven't. Last night, we went out to a party. We decided, we were dressed, and we were gone. It was only up the road at Roy and Brenda's. We were in a party mood, so bring it on. And though the bloke who played the keyboard started sagging, though the vocalist was ashen with fatigue, still on the floor the pair of us were dancing. Endurance, there was no one in our league. When we got up to do the locomotion, there was no one there could say we'd lost the knack. But this morning, as I try to cross the landing, I feel as if I might have broke me back. Or it could be more a fracture of the pelvis. I can get about, I'm all right once I start. But I have to shuffle very, very slowly and keep my legs about 3 feet apart. While the addicts, they were clustered in the garden, lighting up their fags and their cigars. It was probably a clear and perfect evening, but the smoke was blocking out the moon and stars. They had a fella there just like Sinatra. I shouted, turn the volume up, let's hear him sing. But lately I am coming to regret that, because this morning I can't hear a bloody thing. But when the band had packed their gear into the transit and the cats were on the wreckage of the feast, we staggered up our road on Sunday morning and the sun was slowly rising in the east. I don't know what was in that last libation, but I laughed fit to burst at everything I saw. Only now I can't remember what was funny, and I feel as if I might have broke me jaw. So far, no encounters with my husband since we came singing up the stairs at 4:30. I couldn't say I'm feeling optimistic, because there's groaning from behind the bathroom door. Last night I was soaring like an eagle, but like Icarus, I flew too near the sun. So this morning I am just a broken woman, devastated that me dancing days are done. I am never at any point set out to be a poet. I never saw myself as a poet. I still hardly see myself as a poet. I wanted to be a performer. I was desperate to get on stage and say something that I hoped would make people laugh. And there didn't seem to be anything. You know, there was Albert and the Lion and sort of monologues like that, but they didn't reflect my sense of humour or my timing or my vocabulary or anything like that. And it was ages before I put two and two together, because I was very good at English. I was hopeless at anything else, but I was good at English and I longed to be a performer. And it wasn't really until I was about 19 years old and I was in the Air Force in Singapore that I put it together and wrote something that I hoped I could perform and which would make people laugh. And it came about because I had a boyfriend called Mike, and he had an irritating mannerism. In that, whatever you said to him, he would begin his reply by saying, "Well, this is the thing, you see." This is true. And it didn't matter what you said. You might say, "I have won £1 million on the premium bonds," or "I have contracted bubonic plague in both legs." But his reply would always begin by, "Well, this is the thing, you see." And it drove me nuts. And you steeled yourself. You steeled yourself waiting for it to come. Anyway, it sort of gave me the idea for a poem that I thought I would try out with an audience. So I'm going to do this one for you, just because it was the first one I ever wrote to perform. And to my great joy and disbelief, people laughed. Well, I got up in the morning, like you would, and I cooked a bit of breakfast, like you would. But at the door I stopped, for a message had been dropped, and I picked it up and read it, like you would. "Oh, blimey," I said, like you would. "Have a read of this. This is good." It said, "I live across the way and admire you every day, and my heart, it breaks without you." Well, it would. No, this is different. This is, well, it would. It said, "I'd buy you furs and jewels if I could." And I go along with that. I think he should. It said, "Meet me in the park when it's good and dark, and so me wife won't see I wear an hood." Oh, I blushed with shame and horror, like you would, that a man could ask me that, as if I would. So I wrote him back a letter saying, "No, I think it better if I meet you in the Rose and Crown like we did last Thursday." So that was my first effort, my first ever effort at a poem which I could perform. And I never looked at it as poetry. I looked at it as a form of comedy which happened to rhyme. And when I look through this book, there are all sorts of significant moments. One of which is when I had our first son. My husband and I have got two sons. And when I had our first little boy, I hadn't been that maternal, really. I didn't feel like a particularly maternal person. My sister absolutely loved babies, and she'd never go past a pram. You know, she'd always go and look and coo about the baby and how beautiful they were. And I didn't have those feelings. And I was worried. And I said to my mum when I knew I was having a baby, and she said, "Don't worry, because the love comes with it." And I think that's very sweet, and I think it's very true. And when my son was born, he was very beautiful. He was late, and so he'd filled out. You know, he wasn't a wrinkled little baby, and he had a little bit of hair, and I thought he was magnificent. And when I walked up and down the maternity ward and looked at other people's babies, a poem sprang to mind. "My baby's eyes are bluer than yours. He's got much more hair and he's stronger. He's ever so bright and he sleeps through the night. And of our two, I'd say mine is longer." I swear it's the truth. Mine is cutting a tooth. And he's obviously going to be tall. So it's hard to explain now I've looked at your wine, why you bother to have one at all. I think it's important when you're old not to look back. I think it's great to look forward and do new things. And in the last few years, since 2019, in 2019, a young music teacher approached me and asked if I would write the lyrics to a school's version of Peter Pan. And I loved it. You know, I didn't have to write about the things you would expect from Pamairs. I could write for a crocodile and a pirate and a mermaid and a fairy. And it was such fun. I loved it. And to see all those kids on the stage all singing my words, and it was magical after being a one-man band for so long. And recently, I was working on another project, and I've met George Fenton, the lovely composer behind all the David Attenborough programmes and countless films. And we hit it off. I liked his music and he likes my words. And we have written a show called Who Are You Calling Vermin? And this is about life in the countryside, but it's not a rosy view. You know, it's not the view you so often see of the babbling brook and the nodding bluebell and the piglet trotting along to tinkly music and all that. You know, it's a much more realistic view, which I think, because I've lived in the country all my life, I know about. Anyway, it's lovely. We've done one performance of it in Barnes, and that went a storm. And we're doing it again in the Basingstoke Anvil, and we're doing it in the Chester Story House. And I started to feel guilty because I'm claiming to be writing a musical, and yet apart from 8 chords on the guitar, I have no musical ability at all. And so I thought I would start to learn to play the piano. And I found a lovely music teacher who didn't mind that I was old, and she's been teaching me to play the piano, and I love it. And so I would like to write you a little, I'd like to read you a little verse which I wrote on the subject. I'm learning to play the piano. I wish I had done so before. My husband, a classical lover, gets up and closes the door. This morning I murdered Tchaikovsky. Today it's a Beethoven score. Tomorrow I'll slaughter Stravinsky. And tickets are free on the door. Anyway, now how long have I got left, Harry?
Ray, 1 more minute.
1 more minute? Oh my goodness. Okay, so, 1 minute only. Well, I'd like to do... One more poem. Okay, I'd like to do this one. My husband's home was much more cultured than ours, and I don't say that in any apologetic way, but his mother was a very good hostess, and she used to put on beautiful dinner parties with flowers and lovely food, and whenever I tried to do something similar to emulate my mother-in-law, it always went a bit like this. It seemed like such a good idea, a flash of inspiration. To hold a dinner party, yes, off went the invitations. A proper dinner party too, traditional and smart, with all my oldest, dearest friends, the darlings of my heart. We'd clear the dining table of each dog-eared magazine. We'd dust around the skirting boards, the place would be pristine. We'd pick up all the clutter, drive the Hoover around the floor, and see again our carpet after 18 months or more. Oh, I'd plan a lovely menu, 7 courses at the least, an absolute abundance, an ambrosia, a feast, with table linen matching and the candles burning bright. What a celebration, what a banquet, what a night. Yeah, well. That was then and this is now, and one thing's very clear. I can't imagine why I thought this was a good idea. Today's the day, tonight's the night, they'll be here in an hour. I'm absolutely shattered and I haven't had a shower. I haven't chilled the wine or put the nibbles in a bowl. I found my silver cutlery, it's all as black as coal. I haven't found the candles, we are making do with these. One's a stump and one is bent at 45 degrees. I haven't folded napkins in sophisticated shapes or beautified a plate of cheese with celery and grapes. I haven't spent the morning on a floral centrepiece, and I'm skidding round the kitchen floor on half an inch of grease. My husband's disappeared. I don't know where he's hiding now. He hasn't helped at all. We've had a monumental row. I don't know where the day's gone, and I am filled with dread. Forget the conversation, I just want to go to bed. The guests I thought were witty, their attractiveness has palled. The men weren't so enticing, now they're boring and they're bald. The women, all are shadows of their former vibrant selves. They're all in sizes 24, they used to be in 12. I stupidly asked George. I used to think him quite a card, not meaning to be spiteful. Now he's just a tub of lard. He'll bring his lovely wife, she'll tell you all about her back. One's morbidly obese and one's a hypochondriac. I haven't found the coffee cups, we'll have to have the mugs. The crumble's looking soggy and the kale was full of slugs. The meat is a disaster, undercooked and full of blood. The dog's pooed on the carpet. I haven't done the spuds. I thought I'd like to do this, but I don't know where to start. I thought I'd like to see them, but I've had a change of heart. Their old recycled stories and voracious appetites. Forget the darlings of my heart, they're all a bunch of shite. I meant to be the grand hostess. Well, kiss goodbye to that. I haven't changed my frock, I smell attractively of fat. I've done my best, it's all gone west, I've ruined all the grub. Too late, here come the bastards now. Let's all go down the pub. Thank you very much.